You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Much has been said and written about the role of Facebook and Twitter in the ouster of President Hosni Mubarak. To find out more about what social media was and was not responsible for, we're joined this morning by Adil Iskander. Adil Iskander is author and co-author of several works on the Arab media, including the first major analysis of the satellite TV network Al Jazeera, which was published in 2002. He writes a regular column for the English website of an independent Egyptian newspaper. Adil Iskander is instructor in the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and we've reached him this morning in Ottawa. Hello, Adil.
Hello. Hello, Lorraine. Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Let's start before the mass protests began. Tell us about the Facebook page, We're All Khalid Said.
Well, the page grew out of sort of a feeling, a general sentiment that wanted to memorialize a young man called Khalid Said. He's a 28-year-old businessman in Egypt. He lives in Alexandria, and he represents, you know, a generation of Egyptians. 60% of the Egyptian population are under the age of 30, and they've felt a feeling of general curtailment politically, economically. And as a young man, you know, he spends a lot of time online. Of course, he's not of modest means, so he has access to the internet and access to social media. And he spent a lot of time online sharing ideas and thoughts with people. And on one occasion, he decided to circulate a video illustrating police corruption in Egypt. It was a YouTube video of two police officers splitting a drug bust, essentially, with criminals and smugglers. And it showed the complicity of the police force, which has been accused of torture and various other violations against human rights. And he was attacked in an internet cafe shortly afterwards by two plainclothes police officers who beat him up and brutalized him. And so a photograph was taken inside the morgue of the young man's face, which had been contorted beyond recognition. And that photo was posted online and went viral. As soon as that happened, a young man, a Google executive based in Dubai, recognized that this was a crucial moment. This person represented, you know, the masses in Egypt, and there needed to be a larger campaign against police brutality. So the photo was posted, and a Facebook page was created called "We're All Khalid Said," basically arguing that what happened to Khalid Said, was something that could happen to any young person in Egypt, that the police had reached that level of corruption, that the regime had lost all its legitimacy. And the page swelled in numbers and followers. So by January 25th, this happened in June of 2010, but by January 25th, the first day of protests, the number of followers of the page had reached 430,000 followers, which is quite substantial by any measure. And it was the first page to call for protests on January 25th. So it became a rallying point for many young people online who had turned to the internet and social media as a portal to express themselves when the streets were not necessarily their own, that the police force and state security in Egypt controlled the street. So the internet sort of set up that momentum. And became a portal for organization and planning for the early protests.
Adil, then, how did this call for the protest on January 5th get out to millions of Egyptians who are not connected to the internet?
Well, I think the message all of a sudden transferred from the internet to satellite television. There was a sense that something was going to happen on January 25th, that it wasn't going to be a typical day, that one should expect tens of thousands of people. So various opposition leaders in Egypt decided that they would heed the call and lend their support to the demonstration. And in addition to that, you also had the various civil society groups and human rights organizations and opposition groups who had supported the campaign to come out on January 25th, literally going out into the streets and going to some of the busy neighborhoods, the underprivileged communities that don't have access to the internet, and called on them to come out and protest. So the protesters marched down the streets and clapped their hands and call on people to join them. Come down from your homes. They would call them from their balconies and tell them, come down, join us, we're protesting, we represent the masses, we're not alone. This is not a sectarian thing. This is not, you know, a small group of people. We speak on behalf of the Egyptian people. And that's how their numbers essentially magnified in literally a matter of minutes, not hours. I've been told by some people who were protesting that it literally took minutes for the numbers to go from hundreds to thousands in some instances because of this strategy to go from online to offline.
That's an amazing story, really. How did the role of social media change as the protest continued and grew?
Well, the Egyptian government, you know, which had essentially turned a blind eye to all that's happening online, they assumed that the Facebook generation or the young folks who are online were a very, very small sort of swath of the population, that they don't really represent the masses. And if they tried to overthrow the regime, I mean, they really, even if overthrowing the regime sounded too ambitious, even the protesters themselves could not have anticipated the massive participation that they ended up getting. So the Egyptian government decided to ignore the call for protests. But of course, as the numbers swelled, the Egyptian government became very alarmed and they decided to shut down the internet completely for a period of 5 days. They also cut off mobile phones for a day. This was a period of immense alarm on the part of the government. And that's when the role of the social media diminished and it turned to the streets completely. And it was shortly after that that the internet came back. They were forced to bring it back online. And all of a sudden you had an influx of content, videos, photographs, accounts from people who were on the street in Tahrir and elsewhere all over Egypt of the police violations and the attacks by, by the government and government-hired thugs. And this essentially destroyed whatever legitimacy the government might have had. And that's another component of the social media. So they went from organizing and mobilizing initially to all of a sudden documenting and archiving what has happened in the streets of Egypt and distributing them not only to Egyptians who have access to social media, but to the world at large. So all of a sudden you had international media covering the story with access to tangible evidence of these violations. And so all of a sudden this shroud that protected the Egyptian government had wore off completely, and the demonstrations continued to grow. So it was basically this incredible momentum that was a marriage of the social media, the traditional media, and events on the ground.
Outside Egypt, people were glued to Al Jazeera. Was the network also a force inside Egypt?
Well, the force has been, Al Jazeera has been a major force in broadcasting in the Arab world as a whole since 1996. So many Egyptians have been influenced by the kind of rhetoric and the dissident stance that Al Jazeera has taken in relation to governments in the region. But it was during the actual revolution in Egypt that the government actually shut down the network. They were able to pull the network off their own satellites. The Egyptians run a satellite called Nilesat, which carries Al Jazeera. So they basically were able to cut off access to Al Jazeera inside Egypt. So Al Jazeera was more influential for the region and the world at large to witness what was happening in Egypt, but had very, very little impact inside Egypt. Instead, you had other stations that were not interrupted, like Al Arabiya, their prime competitor, and then BBC Arabic, which was, a very, very important moment for their in the Egyptian Revolution. So unfortunately for Al Jazeera, they became the voice that projected the Egyptian Revolution globally, but rather inside Egypt, they didn't have as much influence.
Now, I actually heard a story of an anchor woman for the state television who were censoring, basically not passing information, and she basically walked out and quit. So what was that sort of an isolated incident, or was there more to it?
I think as far as people walking out publicly, it was fairly uncommon, but it became evident that state broadcasting in Egypt was basically parroting the government stance, and it looked completely disconnected from realities on the ground. So while Egyptians were flicking through the channels and watching demonstrations that brought out millions of people into the streets, state television had, images of a tranquil Nile and, beautiful images and patriotic music and sort of stuff. So it was evident at a certain point that the state broadcasting had failed its public responsibility. And the demonstrations had effectively moved from Tahrir Square to the area in front of the building. So when the day that Mubarak stepped down on February 11th, the demonstrations were literally in front of the state broadcaster, and it was impossible for the anchors on TV to overcrowd the sounds of people screaming and chanting from outside of their building. I mean, it was quite an iconic image to see anchors trying to speak over the protesters who were right in front of the state broadcaster's building.
Now, on January 20th, the marketing manager for Google was arrested. When he was released 10 days later, there was a tremendous outpouring of support for him. Why is he so important?
Well, he's important because he was the young man who had set up the We Are All Khaled Said page, but he had done so anonymously. Most people didn't realize that there was a connection between the, you know, fairly prominent, you know, high-ranking Google executive in the company in the Middle East and this web page that had become so significant for public mobilization. And so when he came back, before he was released after 12 days of detainment, there was a general sentiment that the actors or the figures or the individuals behind the revolution were questionable. And some of the propaganda from the government had started resonating with those who knew very little about the internet and Facebook. So when he appeared on Egyptian private television and gave an interview, he had just been released and he was shown images of people who had died, young people who had died in the Tahrir protests. And he became incredibly emotional and started crying on TV. And that became a huge sort of, trigger for more protests. People felt compelled because they saw how genuine, how simple this young man was, that all he wanted was a better future for his own people, that really there wasn't a huge political agenda. And it was a very, very simple call for change in Egypt. And so all of a sudden his page, where Al Khaled Said, increased in followers by almost doubles. It went from maybe 500,000 to close to 900,000 followers, literally overnight. So this was a huge influx of energy and momentum for the movement. And then, of course, the protests continued to increase in number, and we ended up getting, you know, astronomic figures like 3 million people in Tahrir Square and almost 8 million across the country. So that played a major part in convincing those who were sort of fence-sitters that this revolution was genuine, it was a youth movement, it was substantial, that it had good intentions, that it spoke on behalf of the masses and wasn't questionable. There was nothing really behind it. He had fashioned himself very much after the Hollywood film, the Wachowski brothers film, V for Vendetta, the sort of the protagonist in that film, sort of an invisible, anonymous person who is interchangeable with the masses, and, you know, basically led the movement in that way, and was very much the builder of consensus as he did so on that page. So those who had followed him for, you know, the last year or so, all of a sudden saw how genuine and simple he was. And that became, that catapulted the movement even farther.
Some people say that that social media created the revolution. On the other hand, some people say that its role has been greatly overstated. What do you think, Adil?
I'm probably somewhere in the middle of this gradient. I don't believe, the spectrum of arguments between, you know, Clay Shirky, who's been arguing that, you know, social media are chief determinant of political activism nowadays, that it's an active component of it. And then you've got the Malcolm Gladwells, who's like, well, revolutions have existed from the time of smoke signals and newspapers. What's the difference here? I tend to believe that social media have basically magnified and amplified and expedited the way revolutions happen. And at the same time, they've also created portals or sort of avenues for communication where they wouldn't otherwise exist. So rather than meeting underground in bunkers and in sort of secluded areas or finding the private space to negotiate, the social media have allowed people this open space to converge and come together and create movements. So I would probably be somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. I wouldn't go in either direction. I think social media have been a critical component, but not necessarily a determinant of either how revolutions unfolded and perhaps not even how they've either succeeded or failed.
Will the internet continue to play a role in Egypt as people struggle to change the government there?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the news today is a testament to that. There were videos posted on YouTube over the last couple of days of officers in the Egyptian military who are not necessarily defecting, but are calling for changes within the military so as to live out the revolution's demands. that the military is not moving fast enough to purge the old regime and to hold people accountable and to create genuine change in the country. And that has led to a huge protest in Tahrir Square yesterday, which was broken up by the military in a fairly violent way. There were two people killed overnight. And all of this is being circulated in the social media at a time when traditional broadcasters, television and radio in Egypt are very, very edgy about discussing military violations and the Supreme Council for Armed Forces and what they have done to hurt the revolution. So all of a sudden, the social media are now sort of propping up again as becoming the only avenue where you can get unfettered, unadulterated, uncensored information about what's happening in Egypt on the ground and elsewhere.
Thank you for talking with me this morning, Adil. It really is a fascinating story, and we'll continue in the Middle East.
Thank you so much, Lorraine. Thanks for having me.
Bye now. I've been speaking with media scholar Adil Iskander. He writes a regular column for the English website of an independent Egyptian newspaper, and he's adjunct instructor in the Center for Contemporary Arab Studies in Georgetown University in Washington, D.C.